Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Bizarre when I seen him that time at Celtic Park. I went, "Oh, you're a aren't you?" And he just looked at me, just turned around and walked away.
Celtic blow a 2-goal lead at Ibrox. The title race is in the balance. 6 games to go. Which way is it going to end up? Before getting into the podcast, just want to say a very big thank you to everyone who joined us on Patreon this weekend for our full Glasgow Derby coverage. We had loads of people sign up just to join us on Patreon. We have now got 1,889 people on our Patreon enjoying extra content, supporting the podcast, keeping the lights on, helping us upgrade the equipment. And if you want involved in that, extra podcast videos and writing, you can check us out at patreon.com/20minutetims. Support the podcast and treat yourself. Stephen O'Malley.
Good fun yesterday, wasn't it? Our coverage you speak of.
5 hours of dense content. Dense in the, not the stupid way. 5 hours of dense, nutritionally dense content. Yeah. Look, we're 24 hours on from the game, and after the game, it's been quite funny, depending on who you speak to, everyone seems to be quite, they're either thought 3-3 was a terrific goal, terrific result for Celtic, and that's going to propel us on to the end of the season, that spells good things for the rest of the season, and there are people in the camp who think, oh, 3-3, I would have preferred to be a wee bit more comfortable with things. Stephen, where are you on it?
Well, after 24 hours or so on from our reaction to the game, and you're right, we were in this room for 5 hours talking about the game. We live streamed all the way through the game, so it was emotional stuff. There were highs, there were lows, there were laughs.
We bonded.
Yeah, there were tears. But I think there was a little bit of deflation in the room because we watched it together and we were on that roller coaster, the 2-goal lead and then going 3-2 up towards the end and then that slipping away. There's a little bit of despondency in the room after that because it was very much a case of a missed opportunity. Look what we could have had there. It kind of got away from us at the end. Now that we're a wee bit on from it, maybe have an opportunity to look back on it with fresh eyes, a little bit more kind of clear in a big picture sense. I don't know if I feel all that differently about it, but I think I still feel like Celtic have kind of passed up a good opportunity there because that's what being a fan's all about. Really, you want to go and you want to beat them on their home patch, and then that's such a big statement that they were surging away in the title race, but then we went and beat them for the third straight time. But that was kind of taken away from us a wee bit at the end. Yeah. It was a wee bit of disappointment. But looking at the bigger picture, broadly speaking, it is a positive result for Celtic because while both teams can say this now, it kind of is still within Celtic's grasp to go on and basically take control of the destiny of this title. And that's really what we wanted going in. I think we all agreed that it was if not necessarily a must win, a certainly must not lose, because this was going to be the big psychological blow. Whichever way it was dealt, turned out it was a draw and a stalemate, and there were differing reactions after the game. Rangers had a big one. Not really too concerned about that.
The manager did it. I mean, he had no idea what the score was, because after it, he said they had the moral victory, and then he said it was great to come away with the victory. He thought they'd won it.
His reaction is different to mine, but as I say, broadly speaking, I think it is a positive result because going in an away score draw with your biggest rivals in a very tight title race, it's definitely not a negative, but I do reserve the right to be feel a little bit deflated after the way it panned out.
Well, really. That's it. Celtic are no responsible for the way I feel about the game, Melly. It's just having watched it pan out the way it did, I was left feeling quite disappointed. And partly that's my fault, and I need to adjust my expectations a wee bit because there's nothing between these two teams now. I think it's fair to say Celtic have contrived, after years of dominance, to get themselves into a position where there's basically nothing between the teams. The league is, what, we're 30-odd games into the league season. We've played them at Ibrox, and at this point, right now, both teams are pretty much neck and neck, and that's, it's my fault for being a wee bit disappointed in that, because I thought that would be a lot more comfortable for Celtic. I thought the way the first half panned out, the second half would pan out that way, and we'd have, you know, one foot in Rangers' neck for the most of the game, and we would just breeze through it. It's not like that anymore, and I suppose I just need to accept it, but it was I was left a wee bit deflated after the game.
Yeah, I can understand that, and I can understand why people think it's a good result. I think no matter what way you look at it, in the cold light of day today, when I got up this morning, I thought, you know what, that was a missed opportunity. And if it had finished 2-2, I think I would have thought, do you know what, we got away with that there because they could have went on and win that. But getting that 3-2 up in the 88th minute, and you think, oh, come on, but there was 10 minutes left to go. It's a long time. So
aye, plus, aye. beat on with a plate as long as it took.
But I think, we'll get to him.
Yeah, I think I'd have taken a draw before the game, so now coming away from the game being disappointed with that. But I think
there's something in that, though, isn't there? Because I've seen a lot of chat about, oh, with a bit in your hand off for a draw last week. Right, okay, but see, if I took your side at 2-0 and went, give you a draw right now, what would you say? If I took your side at 3-2 with 10 minutes left, went, give you a draw right now, what would you say? The majority of people who originally started wanting a draw, after you're 2-0 up, they're not going to say, I'll take a draw. So it's, because we said that on the podcast, didn't we? We said it's a must not lose.
Yeah,
must not lose.
And I think a draw coming away from it is a decent result because it keeps it in Celtic's hands. And while I got up this morning, the first text I read from a Rangers supporting mate was, I think that puts the advantage in your hands. And I thought, wait, I can see how that, but I can see how I could think that was a missed opportunity for Celtic. But if it was a choice between going away from home and getting a point and having your home game still to come, or the other way about, I want to go away from home to my big rivals, get a point, and then have the home game where if we win our six games, we can win the league. So while we might look at back at it as a missed opportunity, at the end of the day, looking back over the game, the draw was probably the fair result because of the way the first half panned out and the second half panned out. Celtic were dominant in the first half. Rangers scored 4 goals in the second half, but obviously they didn't all count. So a draw was probably a fair result, but I'd love to have beat that mob, man.
It's one of those rare occasions where all of the most of the reactions are obviously going to be extremes out there because it's an emotional type of game. That's a derby and all that. But basically, most of the reactions are fairly valid, all the way from, I would have taken a draw and I'm happy with the draw because it keeps the title race in our hands, all the way to, I'm not going to celebrate a draw against our bigger rivals.
The reaction I found most puzzling, to be honest, was the Rangers' reaction, because we've not been good this season. This is, we've said it before, this is the worst Celtic team that have come up against the Rangers team to win the league, I think. If not one of the worst, that's certainly debatable. We go to Ibrox, no fans in the ground. Everything's going their way. We've got our captain missing. We've got Rio Tati's only fit enough to play certain minutes. So we were kind of there. Rangers had a good opportunity to beat us. They probably haven't had as good an opportunity to beat us since the last game at Ibrox, and even then,
was in Lagerby, okay, one.
But they had Beale in charge, so they don't even have that issue. So this is Rangers' probably best chance to beat us. And if they beat us, that might seal the title for them. Yeah. The way things are going with us, they beat us, then they win their game in hand. Even what we do at Parkhead kind of doesn't matter at that point.
That would have been 5 points, wouldn't it?
That would have been 5 points with 5 games to go. So, but they're kind of happy with the draw, which look, I don't really, Rangers fans are free to celebrate in any way they want, right? But if I was a Rangers fan and I was looking at that, I wouldn't have, certainly wouldn't have been happy with my team doing a lap of honour around the pitch after it. They're celebrating, I think, a wee bit too much, because that is a real chance blown for Rangers, and I wouldn't be too happy about it. But that's all I've got to say about the Rangers thing. I think you're right, Stephen. I think certain Celtic fans are happy. Certain Celtic fans are no very happy. And I think I'm sort of erring towards the, it's so different because it makes me sound so selfish. I'm like, well, I'm not happy at that. But it was a 3-3 draw, as Melly said, at Ibrox. All the reasons I've just laid out why Rangers could have won the game, they didn't. So even by my own metric, it's still a good result. But I think what it is
because it was right here.
Because it was right there. And I am nervous about how the season's going to pan out now. And I think what's made me nervous is seeing Celtic are still capable of that second half collapse. That we have not completely turned a corner here, that I thought the rest of the league is going to be a breeze. There's six games to go. There's probably more drop points for both teams in it. And all Rangers really need to do now is get a draw at Parkhead. And I think, having seen that game play out like that, I think that result could be mirrored at Parkhead. Look, I'm still keeping it.
Tapping the sign, are we?
I'm still keeping the hail. I am. The hail has been kept, but that is not as comfortable as I'd hoped or wanted it to be.
Well, I spoke of the extremes there, where people would refuse to celebrate a draw, quite rightly so, and people who would think a draw is a positive result. But there are degrees within there where you could say, yeah, Celtic are obviously favourites going into most games they play. Well, all games they play domestically at Celtic Park. So therefore, you would make Celtic favourites to beat Rangers at Celtic Park and win all the other games. However, there is the opposite of that, where people would probably be within their rights to say, but Celtic have not done that all season. They've not managed to put a winning run really together all season, apart from that period over Christmas where they beat Bucky Thistle and a few other teams. So there are reservations in there as well, which is what I mean by kind of everybody's right. However you reacted to that game yesterday is probably a fairly valid reaction, unless you're being ridiculous about it. But
I think that's one thing that's puzzled me. People going, that's it, draw there, perfect, win our next six games and win the league. And I think to myself, have you been watching Celtic this season? Yeah. Like, this win our next six games and win the league stuff, it's far from a stick on.
Yeah, of course not. And it's going to be difficult. It's going to be very, very tough, which is why I think it is such an uneasy position to be in after a game like that, where I don't know if anyone even contemplates drawing a game against your rivals. See, when you're building up to it, the week is really intense, especially the day before it and then the morning of. You're not thinking about drawing. You're thinking about, this could either make or break our title race. And then when the draw plays out, especially in the way it played out, when Celtic had two leads, you don't really know how to respond to a draw. You don't really know how to take it. And then you start making the calculations and permutations and trying to look at the bigger picture. So I think everyone has had a wide variance in their reaction to it.
But Melly, is there just an element of, this is what a title race is?
This
is like, we've just had it all our own way for far too long. So the slightest sniff of a title race that's going to go down to the wire, this doesn't necessarily mean Celtic are not going to win the league just because they're not 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 points ahead by this stage in the season. Both teams are neck and neck. Both teams could easily win the title from this point on. This is what a title race is, and you need to buckle up for it. Jamie,
I think when you look at it, like, Celtic have much better Celtic teams than this have been beaten by Rangers in a season, but this Celtic team haven't. They've not been beaten by them, and yet they're still in this race because of the results against everybody else. So I think it's, look, Celtic were the only team that were ahead in that game at certain points, and then they threw it away. But at the same time, Rangers were never ahead, yet got themselves back into the game. Even the third goal for Celtic, you think, oh, could that be it? But the way the game was going, I don't think any one of us three thought that was it, was it? They were still thought Rangers are going to get chances. So I think the way it panned out, you can look at it and go, aye, Celtic could have done better in certain instances, but as well, Rangers could have done better in any instance. That's what their fans will be saying. So it is tight. It's going to be like this for the rest of the season. And what Celtic just need to do is sort themselves, because these games take care of themselves. It's the other ones that haven't been taking care of themselves that have been the tough ones for Celtic.
An absolutely, absolutely huge running. The running is absolutely massive. But Melly, there was plenty of positives about the game. One of those is Dyson Maeda. We got all the Dyson stuff. We got the full spectrum of Dyson. We got closing down, terrorising Tavernier, missing sitters, wild crosses. We got it all. And
we got a goal.
We got a goal as well. Yeah, we got a goal. And I think his contribution against Rangers in these games is always huge. And when teams attack domestically, that's when he comes into his own, because this closing down, they just can't deal with it. Tavernier in particular. I thought when he scored so early on, I just thought, oh my God, this is dreamland.
Yeah, I think the first 20 seconds is unbelievable what happened. But I think it was, we had Rangers scouted again, and Alex talked about how he was impressed with Rangers press. But from the very start, it was Celtic's press that caused Rangers all the problems.
The whole first half, they were so nervy as a result of that constant press.
And then
Can I just ask a quick question? Who's Alex Melly?
Oh, Alex is a fantastic scout. Works for The Athletic and scouts players, teams, for us. Great guy, and he knows his stuff.
And you can get all that stuff on patreon.com/20minutetims. I'll do the sales pitch. Melly, continue.
Yes. So it was Celtic's press that caused the first goal, and it was right from the off as well, because obviously it was from kickoff 20 seconds in, but they didn't get the ball, went back to Rangers, and they, instead of doing the usual hoof forward, they try to play it about a bit, and Celtic just pressed. Sterling gives the ball away, Joe Hart plays it forward, and Tavernier has another nightmare where he's looking at somebody else to bail him out, and Dyson does what Dyson does. He's so effective in these games. But there was one time after that where he goes past Tavernier and then he shanks his cross into the stand. And look, you take it, because with Dyson, this is what you get in these games, in the bigger games. He's one of the first names in the team sheet because this is what he does. He'll put teams under pressure. And for all Tavernier's influence, scores against Celtic a lot, but he's not involved in open play a lot, and that is down to Dyson Maeda. He keeps him back, he makes him have to think, and if that's the start of Tavernier's game, is causing a goal, then he's going to have to think about going forward the whole game, and he did that. Dyson Maeda done a decent job on him, and Celtic off to a dream start, man. It was incredible just seeing that ball go into the net and that wee noise it makes when it clinks into the net.
You can thank Matondo for not having to issue yet another apology for a Tavernier performance. He's fond of that, isn't he, Tavernier? He's apologising for performances and promising never to do that again. Sorry about the last one. We'll be better in the next one. So you can thank Matondo for abandoning that plan. But I was crazy from Tavernier. See, when you see it back, the distance between him and Butland is enormous. Yeah. And as soon as the ball comes over, so Joe Hart is I wouldn't call it an aimless punt. It puts it out in that direction and it kind of bends round. You see Tavernier basically like, I've got this. And then all of a sudden, oh, no, I absolutely do not got this. And he doesn't know what to do, because thinking that Butland's going to come for that is insane, because it is comfortably 40 yards out. It is much closer to that by the time he smashes it off Maeda into the bottom corner. But when he is issuing the camsy, I've got this, he's miles away from Butland. And then all of a sudden he realises he's got to kick into gear, and by that time it's too late. So another absolutely bizarre start. He was heavily involved in the last Maeda goal at Ibrox as well. I think it was Morelos that played the daft pass.
Yeah.
But Tavernier shat it again and just let Maeda in behind them. So it's often said, but I think it bears repeating, that he doesn't know how to deal with Dyson Maeda at all, who was having a lovely old time out there in the first half. Remember that bit where it was Tavernier who gave the ball away. He was doing wee pirouettes past everyone.
Across
the box and did a wee pirouette. That was Tavernier that
he
gave
was
the ball away.
In that game.
Yeah, I wish he had done better with the chance he got, but that's, as you said, it's kind of, it's Dyson, he's getting to do all his stuff.
Yeah.
And he did have that big chance, and it looks like a good save from Butland. We see when you see it from a particular angle from behind him, so the goal's kind of on the bottom far corner, is absolutely gaping. Low and hard, just smash it right across
him. Gary Hooper would have buried that, wouldn't he?
Exactly right, Gary Hooper, yeah. Gary Hooper, he ain't, but he brings a lot to the game that's not Gary Hooper-esque, but he's never the same kind of finisher. Unfortunately, it basically hits it straight at Butland, and it looks like a good save, but the whole other side of the goal is gaping. I wish he had done better there.
I hate saying this, right, because it's becoming pundit patter, right?
Right,
it's becoming pundit shit, right? But it is that thing where if Dyson had the finishing of Gary Hooper, he certainly wouldn't be at Celtic, because someone with that pace, that closing down, that sharpness, and who's through on goal and finishes things like that, you're just like, you're never signing him. He's not at Celtic.
It's like we did sign him and not Matt O'Reilly. If he's the more complete player than he actually is.
So we just have to love Dyson for who he is and put up with all his little foibles. I sort of hedged a bet. I made a bold bet on Dyson scoring against Rangers on my own personal Twitter account. Nobody's dug me up for it yet, which is absolutely fantastic.
So announce it on here.
No, I'm just gonna leave that. I'm just gonna leave that one lying.
Presenting this in your pants, you didn't get it, Lineker.
No, nothing as bad as that. They got you mentioned Matt O'Reilly there, another player who I was a wee bit worried last week about, you know, his form going into the game, and if McGregor was fit, which one do you think about dropping? And we'll talk about the rest of the midfielders. But I thought Matt O'Reilly was terrific, and that penalty, man, it was just it was absolutely beautiful.
Brilliant. And no doubt about the penalty as well. Before we get to the ref chat, let's stay on the positive for now.
Yeah.
But yeah, Matt O'Reilly, excellent yet again. Just a top-notch footballer, really is. And again, another one who in the first half was out there really enjoying himself. There was a couple of moments where he's a couple of bits of really nice skill and all that. Lovely through balls. The whole Matt O'Reilly show, really, in the first half. That kind of dipped a little bit in the second half, but as the team were in full flow in the first half, and it was a brilliant performance. I thought it was thoroughly enjoyable, as much as you can enjoy one of these games, right enough, as you're sitting there on the edge of your seat. We'll sell you the whole seat, but you're only going to need the edge of it. So as much as you can enjoy a first half like that, with the intensity of it all, I thought Matt O'Reilly was a joy to watch at times. And the midfield, it's never going to, you can't describe it as full strength because it doesn't have Callum McGregor in it, but on paper it would be what I would have gone for. If you'd told me Callum McGregor is only fit enough to play a certain amount of the game, it is what I would have picked. I think I probably would have said something along those lines last week, so no complaints about it. But yeah, another great performance for Matt O'Reilly.
He's going to be such a difficult player to replace, Melly.
Yeah, he is. He's just got everything in his locker now. He's scored against Rangers, so that's another one to tick off as well. Panenka at Ibrox, so I think...
Was it technically a Panenka? Let's have this discussion, because I've seen people talk about, to me, the Panenka's a chip. Right, that's a wee dink over the keeper. You know, you dig your foot in the front of your foot, you're boop over the keeper. That was like, he sort of hit it with the pad of his foot, didn't he? The sort of outside pad. Still a great finish, don't get me wrong, still quite cheeky, but not technically for me a Panenka.
Fair enough, I'll take that.
Right, okay, thanks. I thought we were going to have a bit more back and forth. Melly usually goes, nah, not for me, and disagrees with me, but okay.
No, I can't disagree with that. I think it's not your... It's not the, was it the Dembele one, was it? So that was quite, that was vintage Panenka. But
was it Juranovic that did one as well? Was it off the underside of the bar?
I think it was something like that.
Was that in Europe as well? Or something like that. So it was not quite at that level, but it's one of those that if it goes in, it looks brilliant. If the keeper saves it, you look like a mug. But Matt O'Reilly is no mug, and his performance was great. I just wish the whole midfield could have carried on what they'd done in the first half into the second half. And Matt O'Reilly gets a goal, he had a great header before that was saved as well, and he seemed to be at the heart of everything good Celtic were doing. So he just seemed to get about the pitch so much easier in the first half, and it just fell away in the second half. But great player, and love watching him play.
Now, he's a class footballer, Matt O'Reilly, and he sort of, it's another one where you're worried about these games, and then these players just, well, certain players do and certain players don't, but Matt O'Reilly's another one, a bit like Dyson, who just lifts his level a wee bit for these big occasions in Europe, as we saw it as well.
Well, he's got to. I mean, he's a major player for Celtic, and he's, I'm sure he's got ambitions. I'm not going to drag us into that chat about him leaving or not. I think we've all come to terms with that. But if he is a guy who... If he's a guy who sees himself at a certain level in his career, and he's already had the hint of it, we've been linked with Atletico Madrid in the last transfer window. If he sees himself at these levels and establishing himself at international level, maybe standing out in a tournament, you've got to turn up in these games. Yeah. This is the platform for you. This is the platform, the springboard that Celtic offer players like that to go and perform in these games and get yourself to a certain level. Mm. So he has to do that. You know, it can make or break a Celtic player and a Rangers player, their performances in these derbies. Some go through entire careers not turning up in them and still skate away with it, right enough. But Matt O'Reilly has turned up. He's been excellent against Rangers. He's had better performances than that. I think he's completely dominated games. Yeah. And this season, in fact, I think he was better than this. But yeah, one of the standout players on the day, no doubt.
Do you know why Jack Butland isn't getting a call-up for England? I was actually reading about this the other day, because there's been a lot of calls north of the border. He's not getting a call up for England because they actually quite fancy winning the Euros. Right. And they want some good keepers in there. Mm-hmm. So they're probably going to take Pope.
It's so funny if they took Joe Hart. After his last professional game at the end of the season, they took him to the Euros.
Joe Hart's the better keeper. Joe Hart's been absolutely brilliant. I've got a wee thing to talk about Joe Hart here. He has been absolutely brilliant for us. But before we go to that, I want to talk about how we ended up getting the penalty. That was... I listened to Philip Clement Melly after the game. He said...
That was your first mistake.
Yeah. More Belgian waffle. he says... What is it he said? Goldson jumped. The ball nicks off a player in front. Goldson then tries to move his arm out of the way, which is, by the way, distinctly the opposite of what Conor Goldson tried to do. And it hits his elbow and, you know... Surprise, surprise, the Rangers manager doesn't think that was a penalty.
Tries to get his arm out the way of what? Out the way of his own ribcage? Because he put it out the way towards the ball.
Out the way of not hitting the ball.
Of course.
From my mind, Conor Goldson he misjudges the flight of the ball, or maybe it does take a nick, and he just sticks his arm out because he thinks, I don't know what's behind me, I'm getting nothing on this, I'm going to take one for the team here and chance it on VAR. He probably feels emboldened to do that because he does it all the time. Every couple of weeks, Conor Goldson's getting away with handballs. He's not getting punished for them. Why would he not try it? But there is just no way after the VAR flags that up. There's like, it's so blatant from Goldson that there's no way VAR can't award it.
No, it was Stonewall, and not the worst handball I've seen by Connor Nelson, no. But one that you finally get a penalty for. And I don't know, he's just completely lost flight of the ball and he's stuck his arm out, and it's a Stonewall penalty. And we were watching it going, there is absolutely no way on earth you cannot give this, that you can't do it. And we didn't, I don't think MD, really the Celtic players, claimed for it. I don't think we seen it at all.
Because the ball fell, Scales had that chance. As a result, everyone was concentrating on that because it fell right in front of him. Butland managed to smother it. Everyone's concentrating on that rather than what happened with Goldson.
Yeah, but the referee didn't spot it. So they hear the VAR check. And then when you see it, you're like, come on, man. There's no way they cannot give this here. It was rightly a penalty. But the worry for me was, who's going to take it? And Matt steps up. So it's great to get 2-0 up. It's great to get a penalty at Ibrox because it's been a long, long time since we got one of them.
On the thing about how it took a nick off Maida on the way to Goldson, wait a minute here. Hold on a minute. That argument exists so that, for example, have we had a recent example of that where it came off someone's head and maybe hit the back of someone's arm as he was moving away? That argument exists for things like that. If it comes off someone's head, goes straight down the way and hits someone's hand, not a flick on at a cross. Those happen all the time. That's the point, that you're supposed to do that at crosses. You're supposed to flick them on. The defender's supposed to anticipate things like that. Not someone 4 feet in front of him flicking it on and sticking his elbow. That's a ridiculous thing to say.
But as Melly said, I'm sure, people know how I feel about the referees in this country and VAR and all that, but if the referee or the VAR team probably could have found a way not to give it, they wouldn't. But it was as blatant as a handball as you're ever really going to see nowadays, bear in mind the handball rule is so contrived.
If we were a wee bit more YouTube-y there, see when you said people know my feelings about the referees in this country, we would have links to videos appearing in all the 10 videos where we previously mentioned referees appearing all around us right
now. More than 10, wouldn't it?
Just pick a podcast. Catch the one up. Was it after the Hearts game? Catch that one if you want to know how I feel about the referees.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Let's talk about Joe Hart, because I mentioned him earlier on. He kept us in the game at points with some terrific saves. Joe Hart, since I think the turn of the year, funnily enough, since maybe Melly, since he announced his retirement, has been brilliant for Celtic. I just think, we were at the beginning of the season, we were kind of like, or I was anyway, I was like, we could probably, you know, Joe Hart's looking a wee bit ropey. There was a few incidents coming for crosses. He struggled with that, but that seems to be a bit ironed out now. You think, we could probably do improving Joe Hart. I even think Umeli says the goalkeeper is number one priority in January. We need a goalkeeper. Since the turn of the year, since he's announced his retirement, maybe that was playing on his mind a wee bit. I think he's been brilliant. And I know that the Celtic Player of the Year is coming up, and I doubt Joe Hart's going to win Player of the Year, but I think there's a fans' vote for Player of the Year, and I think Joe Hart definitely will be getting my vote. He needs to go away with something this year. We need to sort of send a message to Joe Hart about how much, as fans, we appreciate his contribution to the club, because he's been brilliant for us. And it's just very rare a player comes into Celtic and gets it. He's carried himself with such humility. He's been the consummate professional. He's brought a lot to the club in terms of personality, stature, even quality as a player. And every time you hear the guy talk, you're just left completely impressed by the guy. So I just think, Joe Hart, I just think it's worth mentioning that his contributions in the last couple of weeks, and in that game in particular, were brilliant.
5-year deal. Get it dished out.
I'd give him another year. I can't wait to see if he tempted him another year.
He has had to retire to stop Celtic doing that. Celtic were battering down the door with 5-year contracts like they give to absolutely everybody at the club.
Where's Greg Taylor's contract? Aye. Where's Greg Taylor? That boy deserves a contract as well. While I'm in a given mood, while I'm in a place...
Given mood contracts out after a draw. Look at his
loss. No, it's not to do with that. Look... Liam Scales, there's the debate is whether or not Liam Scales should get a new deal and all that sort of stuff. If there's a queue for who's getting deals and who's not getting deals, Greg Taylor needs to be top of it way before we even start talking about Liam Scales.
Yeah, I think we'll come on to Greg Taylor another time probably, but yeah. Joe Hart's been great, and the sort of first half was so dominant for Celtic, but it still kept him making a double save towards the end, and maybe that's when things started to turn slightly for Celtic, but it was a crucial save at a crucial time. And I thought earlier this season it was imperative that Celtic replaced him in the summer. They didn't do that. Then it got to January. I thought, look, I think he's going to cost us because of what we'd seen last season with Alan McGregor. But Joe Hart's trek just proved me completely wrong. He's been great. He's kept Celtic in games. And like you say, even when he signed, I was really for him signing. I think I said the season before when we were linked with him, I'd signed him as well. But he came in and... it has been a breath of fresh air, because you had this sort of image of Joe Hart and the whole decent part was probably why, but every time he speaks about the club and the fans and all that, and that's what you want as a Celtic fan. It was why Martin O'Neill's team was so successful and why they're so loved, is it just seemed like all these players came in and, for want of a better phrase, they got it. They got it and they understood it. And Joe Hart's been like that. He's been at massive clubs in Man City, no matter what you think of him. He's played at the highest, highest level, World Cups, Euros, Champions Leagues, won the Premier League. But he's still at Celtic Park, loving every second of it. And it's great to see...
You're tearing up.
I know, got a wee bit in the throat there. It's great to see a guy like that. And when Celtic are going out in these games, I'm looking about the team and like just going... win it for him at least.
Yes.
Because for what he's given Celtic and these players there, please win this league for this guy. Because I always say you very rarely do you ride off into sunset. If he walks out of here with a title and coming to Celtic and winning 3 titles in a row, that's an incredible achievement.
By riding off into the sunset, you mean that you very rarely get to engineer your own...
Like Scott Brown ending on the 10 in a row.
Yeah, your own positive outcome, your own exit from the game. And Joe Hart has struck me recently as a guy who does understand the importance of what he's going through now. He's a guy who realises he has come to the end of his career. And there was that moment after a recent game where he was just standing there sort of taking it all in.
Was it Livy?
I think it was actually, where he was just, he looked like a guy who, yes, he has had an amazing career, but it comes to an end for everyone. And he has... going out at the right time at the top, whether he wins the league this season or not, regardless, he is going out at the top. He's a guy who could easily go and kick the ass out for a couple of years in Saudi Arabia or MLS or something like that. Not, I mean, no disrespect, there's plenty of top class players who go and do that, but he strikes me as a guy who sees the importance of leaving a kind of lasting legacy with his career and going out the right way. So I really hope that Celtic can do it for him. I mean, selfishly for all of us as well, but particularly for Joe Hart. I think he deserves to go out on a high, and he'll deserve it if so, because he's been a great player for Celtic. Yeah, there have been ups and downs, just like there is for any player. He's been at Celtic 3 years, which is longer than we typically get out of any sort of major name player at Celtic these days. So there have been ups and downs there, but over the piece, he's been a hugely positive influence on the club, and I'm glad we've had him.
We need to have him. We need to give Joe a brilliant exit. We need to give him a Brexit. Brexit for Joe Hart. It sort of made me reconsider. Oh, not made me reconsider, but I wish it would make Celtic reconsider the sort of transfer model a wee bit with Joe Hart, and we saw it with Aaron Moy as well, because sometimes these guys at the sort of latter stages of their career can give you two or three, or in Adam Moy's case, it was like 18 months maybe, wasn't it? Or was it a
one
year?
Season.
One yeah. season, aye.
Really, so about, really about 4 months after Christmas.
Squeeze 4 months of juice at Aaron Moy. No, but sometimes these guys at the end of their career, Melly, can just inject a wee bit of something in the team. They can give you the last few bits of quality, but they can bring a professionalism, a standard. And it doesn't all have to be like what we saw this summer, young up-and-comers that are making their way in the game. Sometimes those older, experienced heads coming into a club can really add.
Now, yeah. We have tried this before, though. Right. Can I direct you to Lundberg F, Cole C?
Yeah.
Comper M.
Yeah. There are others. So we have tried this in the past before, so it doesn't always work, no. But these have been two very, very positive influences, I have to admit.
Yeah, no, I think if Celtic are going to stick with this stupid transfer model they've got, you're bringing all these young players in. Who do they turn to? And it's in these situations where... In the Ange's first season, where we had Callum McGregor and Joe Hart, two guys that team people could turn to, like, just a wee down, lads, we've got this here. And I think Joe Hart keeps saying it, but not the perfect keeper, but the perfect keeper for Celtic at this time. Yeah. And he's just been brilliant and hopefully can leave that legacy. I still think no matter what happens, he'll go away a fan favourite, but for his sake, I just hope he goes away with three titles.
Odin Holm, speaking of transfer stuff, I noticed he was in
How did he get in there?
He was in Monaco on the week of the game on his Instagram story. I thought, oh, you're not playing then.
So that time years ago, I once bumped into former Celtic, or current at the time, current Celtic ace. What's his name? Hutchison. What was his first name? Ben Hutchison. Staggering out of a casino at about 4 o'clock in the morning. So that would do about 8 hours before Celtic get the game the next day. And I thought, probably not in the squad.
Probably not playing. Odin Holm and Tax Haven Monaco there. You probably should have taken Neil McCann with him. Yeah. give them a few tips. Rio Tati, another one that returned to the squad. I kind of wish in the game that I thought the substitutions were a wee bit iffy. I'm not usually one to question Brendan, but I thought if we could have kept Rio on the pitch, that was probably going to be our advantage. I thought Iwata, the game kind of passed him by a wee bit, but I understand that he probably had to come off Melly. But I thought for the 60 odd minutes he played, he was very, very good. He was instrumental and he was positive, and we just need to keep him fit for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's it. I think you've seen in the first half what Celtic can do when they've got a guy like him on the pitch. He just asserts control over the game, but also plays those passes that get Celtic in. Celtic have had a lot of industry in their midfield, but there's nobody like Hatate that can pick out those passes, and he just seemed to pick up the ball in space and just, you think, oh, he's going to get tackled here, and he'll just pop it round someday and off Celtic going. I think that's what we missed in the second half. It's not that, it's a sort of calmness up the field. A lot of the time it's just when Callum McGregor gets the ball in that holding role and is able to pop off passes, but it's that, you know, the tackle's coming in, but Hatate doesn't panic and he'll just put it round the corner and then he'll move and Celtic go away. That fell away for Celtic. And look, Rio Hatate was part of that in the second half as well. We didn't quite get a grips with it in the second half, but the first half performance from the three in midfield was really good, and it allowed Celtic, Iwata sitting there, just allowed Hatate and O'Reilly to go, and it was just about getting the ball quickly and getting it out wide, and that's when Rangers were put on the back foot and we were getting good deliveries in from the wide areas. It's where the penalty comes from. So if he had been a couple of weeks fitter down the line, a few matches into it, would have been ideal, but if we can keep him fit, he will be a couple of weeks down the line when it comes to the Rangers game at Celtic Park.
Stephen, these second half collapses, I don't know if it's unfair to say that, but these second half dips in performance, if you want to be a bit more diplomatic about it, it's been a feature, hasn't it, for Celtic this season, and we kind of saw it again. I thought when I was watching the game at the time, I remember thinking, weird, there's players in this team who throughout the game kind of didn't engage mentally enough in the task at hand, or either they just found it too difficult an environment to play football. I thought Iwata, whilst was okay, was too slow and was caught in the ball a few times. That's textbook Iwata for me. It's getting caught in the ball in high-risk moments in high-pressure games. And I thought, there's a bit of... I remember I was watching the game, and I remember one point in the second half, Rangers are moving the ball about, and we're second to every ball, and we're sort of watching, and the team were like lacking leadership again. They were kind of relying on teammates to do it for them. Everyone seemed to be relying on teammates to do it for them. I wasn't too impressed with Iwata, and I've got to say, I think Iwata is starting to strike me as maybe a 6, 7 out of 10 player, if I'm perfectly honest. I'm not seeing what I thought I was going to see out of the guy, and I thought Kuhn came into the game But again, it took him a while to sort of fully understand the magnitude and the level of the game until he got booked, and that sort of
20 minutes, I think he got booked.
Until he got booked. So there was a few things second half that I wasn't too happy about watching.
Well, Iwata's such a weird one. Iwata is a really odd player because I've now watched the game back in a bit more clear headed, because when you're watching the game again, we watched it together and live streamed the whole foul jamboree at the time in here. And of course, like when you're so tense, you're sitting on the edge of the seat, as I said earlier, when you watch Iwata receive the ball from a throw-in and just pass it straight back out the pitch again. So Rangers managed to advance about 10 yards and get a throw-in from when we had a throw-in. Iwata just played out of the pitch. You think, your head's in your hands, you're like, what's going on? But watching the game back, able to take in a bit more of the overall performance, safe in the knowledge that the result is what it is. I noticed that some of what Iwata does is brilliant, right? And it sometimes goes unnoticed. He's very tidy, and some of his...
Most recoveries in the game.
Recoveries, right. So yeah, that's a good way to look at it. So I think he had 12 recoveries in the game, and that tends to be just tidying things up, recovering the ball after it's become loose for whatever reason, regaining possession for your team. Did that 12 times. And quite often, if the ball breaks and it's loose and it's between two players, he'll come in, nick it away and pass it first time. But other times he takes forever. Other times he dithers and dithers and dithers, and people just nick it off his toes. It's so odd. It's very inconsistent. You never know which of those two things he's going to do. It's completely unpredictable. So I think he's been good recently, but it was a very, very patchy performance, I thought, at Ibrox. It was neither good nor bad. I don't think it was absolutely terrible. It feels like that at the time when you see him, as I say, passing the ball at the pitch. But looking back, he did some useful stuff as well. The Kuhn thing. Oh, by the way, not to go off on too much of a tangent. Mm. See, when I'm talking about throw-ins and what they're putting out from a throw-in. Celtic are crap at throw-ins.
You're terrible at throw-ins, man.
Crap at throw-ins.
I don't get it.
We need to sort that out. And I don't want to come off overall proper football man. Mm. We need to sort out our throw-ins. But
you want Rory Delap?
I'm not actually talking about the actual physical act of throwing a ball. Right? It's keeping the ball. And when I watch Celtic about to take a throw-in in a recent home game, funnily enough, it also involved Iwata. Greg Taylor's about to take a throw-in, and Iwata's walking away from him with his back turned, and Greg Taylor's absolutely screaming at him, right in front of me. And that happens a lot. So Celtic get throw-ins.
It's so bizarre. It's such
everyone just stands there, rooted to the spot, expecting the ball to land straight at their feet. No one's making decoy runs. No one's making space. It's very, very strange. And I know people scoffed a few years ago when Jurgen Klopp brought in a throw-in coach to Liverpool. And the obvious joke to make about that is that they can't throw a ball as if they're like throwing it off the back of their head and all that. But it's not about the throwing of the ball. It's about what the team does when you get a throw-in. How do we make this like a free kick? It shouldn't be any real different to any other set piece that you've been given. It shouldn't just be random. All right, we pick up the ball and we throw it back into the pitch. We need to take advantage of these.
Especially in-game when you're watching it, it's very frustrating. You're like, why does this look so untidy? That's the best way I could describe it.
Everything's just standing there looking at them. So, yeah, where were we going with that? Yeah, I'd finished on Iwata.
And you started on Kuhn.
Yeah, Kuhn. So, yeah, his first taste of one of those games. I posed the question last week about how it was... the one remaining question about him was, does he have the stones for a game like this? Because it was a criticism of him when he first came into the team. I think that was answered in that he's willing to get the sleeves rolled up and get stuck in. He got booked after 20 minutes, and I've seen it complained, including from Peter Grant in the commentary on Celtic TV, that he was booked for his first foul. That's not strictly true. It was his third foul in 20 minutes. I still think it's excessive. I think it's very harsh to book him for three fouls, but it wasn't quite as harsh as it came across at the time. And at least two of those fouls were very, very blatant breaking up of an attack. So the one he finally got booked for, he just pulled Sterling's shoulder back, which could even be a booking in itself, never mind for...
But we're going to get to the ref.
What caused the confusion was Beaton doing the multiple fouls gesture
thing. Pointing to areas of the pitch where he
pointing
never
to
was.
Area of the pitch where...
That's for that one you committed at left back. That's for that one you committed... He's like, what?
Yeah. So it wasn't amazing from Kuhn, but he got involved and then was basically sort of neutered by his booking after a very short period of time.
A Kuhn or a Iwata?
Hey, I'll go Iwata.
What a wonderful...
That was nice, actually. I think with Iwata, I was all for him playing at the weekend because I thought, look, Celtic needed that solidity in there. But My problem with him was he was there to supply that solidity, but a lot of the time when Celtic were getting broke on, it was just as if they had our back four to run at. Mm. And a lot of the, when you see the highlights, it's just them running at back four.
Peter Vickers picked that up, didn't he, in his post-match? Yeah. He said, defending is not about us doing last-ditch tackles and headers and clearances. It's about stopping the wave of attack, I think he called it.
Yeah, and that's in the first half, Celtic were very compact. So it meant when we got the ball, our midfielders were all easy to pass to because they were quite close but in space, and then they could get it out wide. Second half, that just completely... We were just completely open, and I thought that's why I wanted Iwata to play, because I thought he'll just sit in there and be that guy that's in there. Now, he did have the most recoveries, but I just felt Celtic were too easily broken on, and Rangers could just run at us. And their second goal, the one that got disallowed, is from him getting tackled, but he's basically on the edge of their box and all our other midfielders are ahead of him. Mm. So when he doesn't lose the ball, but when he's tackled, there's just so much space for Rangers to get into. So I thought Celtic could have been a bit more disciplined in that second half, when that was after they'd let in a goal as well, that all three midfielders are just streamed forward. The two wide players are forward. Rangers get the ball back. They don't win it back and ultimately go and score. But it just meant that whole pitch. And it seemed to be a lot when you're watching the game back, when Rangers get the ball, there's so much space for them to run into, and yeah, then they can get the ball out wide, and Celtic seem to be chasing it and having to do these last ditch things. So I thought Celtic, Iwata and the other midfielders could have been a bit more disciplined. And looking back on it now with old Harry hindsight, the substitutions, maybe we should have done things differently. But at the time, I think I agreed with the substitutions. We had to bring on Callum McGregor, and I think Coon's race was running, the fact that he'd already been booked and Rangers were coming at us, and I think one trip and he would have been sent off.
He had one right after he got booked as well. He ran in pretty hard on someone, and I thought he didn't fool him on this occasion, but I thought he's getting carried away here, especially after having been booked. I was amazed to see him come out for the second half, to be honest.
So what surprised me was that people, Rangers fans, who thought the referee had a great game, they thought ultimately all the correct decisions were reached, and they thought, well, that meant the referee had a great game. And my point to the people who said this is both those things are incongruous. You can't think that, because if you are the SFA adjudicator there, what you see is John Beaton 4 yards away issuing a yellow card for a dive, and then the decision had to be completely reversed and it's a penalty.
Yeah.
What you see later on is John Beaton letting a foul go, Rangers scoring a goal, which then completely had to be reversed.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, see, if you're watching SFA and you've been called over at the VAR and you go over and you're chopping a goal off, it's not the signal. This is the signal for you from now on.
Yes, and for anyone listening,
yes, the crossing of the hands.
Yes.
We're crossing the hands, the
Don't
arms
point
over.
To the centre spot.
And then down to the ground. Don't just randomly point, because nobody knew what the... Nobody knew what the fuck was going on.
No.
So the referee, if you think he had a good game, you need to explain why he got terrible decision after terrible decision and the VAR had to reverse it for him. That's not how it works. He also missed a corner goals and handball, but I might let him off with that one. Booking Celtic players, I found that unusual. I found he let far too much go from the most embarrassing performance I've ever seen in my life from that guy, Silva. I've never seen it. I've never seen it like it in my life. It was embarrassing, absolutely embarrassing.
How am I doing, boss? Morelos?
embarrassing.
El Hadjouf.
So I thought that was... See, had they booked him for all that play acting, there would never have been a penalty. So
there was one right before it. There was one that it didn't come up in any of the highlights, but in the game, he goes down in the box at that end. So it's shortly before the penalty, which we'll come to. But there's one where he dives blatantly in the box. He just goes down holding his face. The thing he'd done about 4 or 5 times in the first half. So had action been taken then, he's not diving again. Well, maybe he does, but you know, it's not as easily come to him if the action is taken then and he's booked.
That's never a penalty, right? It's never, ever, ever a penalty. Alistair Johnson gets the ball. He's fallen. There's barely any contact. His leg brushes a guy. The guy's been diving all afternoon. He hits the deck. That, to me, Stephen, you summed it up perfectly. Seeing that contact, even though it's not enough to award a penalty, it's not enough to bring the guy down, seeing that contact was the admin taken care of.
Yeah.
Great, we can award a penalty now, we can even it up. That's all it took. That's all that was required. And see, to be honest, you're just rewarding diving, because from now on, all you need to do is just send a guy to run into the box every couple of minutes, every time, just hit the deck.
If there's contact.
Sooner or later, somebody's leg will brush you, right? But this is the thing that gets me so pissed off about VAR. And it's no any, I'm not saying necessarily there is any conspiracy, but there might be, right? But what I'm saying is make it make sense. Last week at Livingston, contact on Kyogo, clears him out, he falls. No referee drawn to the screen.
Nope.
No VAR call. No referee asked to have a second look at it.
Chris Boyd said he's already going down.
Chris Boyd is a man that doesn't deserve to be mentioned on this podcast, right? So, contact, fall, no VAR. The referee does not go look at it. The Celtic one, the referee is 4 feet from it, sees it, correctly awards the decision, but then is sent back to the monitor. So what is, pray tell, what is the threshold for going to the monitor? Because I don't have a clue anymore.
Clear and obvious, isn't it? Yeah. All that garbage.
But that is, to me, that is as much as clear as you want. I have no clue anymore. What is the threshold for going at the monitor? Somebody legitimately gets tripped in the box at Livingston. You don't go look at it. Somebody goes and dives at Ibrox and they do look, go look at it. Makes no sense to me. How he missed the foul on Iwata Mele when Rangers went through and scored. That was right next to him. He was being blown. He gave, what was it, 20-odd fouls against Celtic, 10 against Rangers. His whistle was out his mouth all afternoon, but the one time he forgets where it is, it's when Rangers are running in on goal. If you were a betting man, you might say he was hedging his bets there. He thought, if I let that go, VAR might not pull it back. And VAR
well, didn't last week for Kyogo. Yeah,
there we go. Yeah. So it's a mess. VAR is a complete mess. And one thing you can't do as the SFA is just discount all Celtic fans as paranoid, or they don't like it anyway, they're never going to like it, because it is frankly a mess, and something is going to give with this. Because you can't just have this where 1 week it doesn't make sense, 1 week it does, 1 week the crowd know what's happening, 1 week they don't, 1 week the fans know what's happening, 1 week they don't, and all the while, just because you've got the support of Rangers fans, who hate Scottish football anyway, you're going to let the thing roll on. So, a complete mystery to me, it's a complete mess, it needs binned, I've been saying it for months, they don't even know themselves how to work it.
No, they don't, and I was thinking about this today, because I'm trying to look at it objectively, because Rangers fans can't. It's, oh, there was contact, so there's a penalty. Like, no, that's not how it works.
We were told so many times that all contact in the box any contact in the box does not necessarily
equal a foul. David Turnbull brought down against Rangers.
So I think with that one, I wonder if it was the other way around and John Beaton had have awarded the penalty for Rangers instead of dishing out the yellow card. Would VAR have went, might want to have another look at that, John. Mm. It looks like the ball's been taken first. So I think it's the replays he's seen. The same for the Hearts game when Celtic had bad decisions go against them. As soon as he walks over, the first thing he sees is the slow motion tap to the knee that Alistair Johnson...
It's after the ball.
So he's not getting the full... He's getting a slowed down version, basically a still of does contact. That's his first thing. He's come over here under pressure with a decision to make, thinking he's got it right, and the first thing he sees is, oh, there might be contact here. You need to show the referee a better angle in the same motion where it's going. This is what you've seen. There's you watching it again, and this is
precisely
how it is.
I don't want to interrupt.
Because then you see the ball getting touched.
This is what's infuriating, as you say, Melly. What is it? Is someone in VAR going, do you want to take a look at that again 4 times in super slow motion? There may have been contact. Because you saw it in real time there. No. VAR, if they're going to continue with this crap, right, it's just now a license for... It's a license. It gives too much license to influence games from Hampden. It gives far too much license. VAR really needs to be a limited amount of time. So you get 4 times to view it back at full speed. That's what VAR needs to be, Stephen. It can't be, do you want another look at that in super slow motion? Because there may have been contact.
Slipper slow motion.
But yeah, no, that's what they call it.
That's what it's known as in Scotland. This rubbish version of VAR we got.
It's super slow motion, right? But then slooper is even slower still.
Yeah. Prick. Well, you know how it feels.
We're treating these refereeing decisions, as you said, he's looking right at it. He watched it. And we're treating these refereeing situations as if it's like 80s WWF or something like that, where the ref has been distracted, he's away telling someone off, and someone has snuck in with a steel chair and clattered someone while he's been looking at something else. That's not happened. There aren't two separate incidents. He's looking right at the feet. See this contact thing, right? I get it. We've not got a leg to stand on because, as you say, all they get to say is just, well, there's contact. Yeah, so therefore, it's a
penalty.
Can I
just pause you again? I know I've got my ADHD running wild on this, right? But listen, it's not about, you say, and that's what everyone says, oh, well, they say that there's enough contact. They don't. Now, and this is why I think it can't continue, being serious for a moment. No other sport is refereed in this way. You don't have, for example, Formula One, and then they just randomly bring out a red flag, right? If there is a red flag in Formula One, stop the race. And the referee, why did you bring that out? I'm not telling you. I mean, do you know what I mean? Like a boxer stops a boxing match. What did you stop the match for? I'm not telling you. You know, they don't. This doesn't exist in any other sport in the world where the referees just arbitrarily make decisions on the pitch that do not make sense in the cold light of day to everyone else watching it. The only thing that backs up these decisions is the allegiance of which team benefits from the decision. Ergo, you've got one half of the crowd going, terrific job. You go, well, that's all I need. No other sport is refereed like this, where decisions are no explained, they don't make sense, but they don't have to make sense because you'll have people who support the team who decisions benefited you backing you up in the press. It's complete nonsense and it's a total mess.
Aye, this contact thing is complete rubbish as well, because as we're constantly being told, not all contacts are necessarily fouls in the box. So the thing we're always being told as well about handballs and, you know, things of that nature is that if a hand is in a certain position as a natural consequence of, like, biomechanics and all that, if it's as a natural consequence of your movement. So why is this contact stuff any different to that? Why can you touch someone's knee and their feet go away? Right, so you touch someone's knee and their feet go away. That's as a natural consequence of you clipping someone's feet. Their feet will go out from underneath them and they will fall. So why is there any contact on anyone's leg whatsoever makes them fall over? That's not as a natural consequence of that. That is just the guy going down. It sounds like I'm just raging about it. I get it. We'll get loads of comments from the Bears as usual.
But it's
preposterous. The whole thing is ridiculous. And it will be the same people arguing the next time they get a penalty against them. Wink. That's going to be anytime soon. The next time they get a penalty against them for something stupid like there was contact, they'll be spinning it the entire other way around and saying not all contact should be a foul in the box.
Because it's the problem they've got with VAR is, right, it's eliminated the excuses for the referees. And honestly, it would take a couple of months for it to filter through. And we've only had VAR about a year now, haven't we? Well, about 18 months, was it last November it was brought in? People are now starting to just get increasingly more confused and pissed off with it. We have seen with VAR penalties awarded for diving. That really should... I'm not talking about the Celtic game specifically. I'm talking about Ross McCausland and Livingston, for example. Yeah. We've seen penalties awarded with VAR for diving. That shouldn't really exist. And I think, as I say, no other sport in the world is refereed in this bizarre upside-down world where we all see what happened, and including the referee who's 4 feet from it, but he's showing slow motion replays, and as you say, Stephen, biomechanics are taken into it when it's handball, but when someone's leg brushes their thigh and their feet miraculously go up over their head, a guy that's been diving all afternoon.
Also, see this again with the contact thing. See, when Joe Hart was studded in the head against, was it St Mirren so long ago? What we were told at the time was the ball was there to be won. It's a contact sport, for fuck's sake. So it's a contact sport, but the second there's any contact whatsoever, it's a penalty. Come on, help me out here.
He's picking an Adidas Predator with his molars, and everyone's going like, ah, well, fair's fair. Oh, look, Melly, what is, we've done the thing on the referee, everybody knows that listens to the podcast. I joke about it, but I'm serious now. It's a mess. What decisions don't make sense from one week to the next. We're seeing identical things refereed completely different ways, and it simply cannot continue. And I know they're changing the head of referees and they don't want the game refereed from Hampden anymore. That all remains to be seen as far as I'm concerned. But back to the football, Melly, just as we're winding down, bringing the end of the podcast. Honestly, in your heart of hearts, what is between these teams here in terms of quality?
In terms of quality, pretty much nothing right now, because I can see the flaws in Celtic's games and I can see the flaws in Rangers' games. Both have weaknesses and both teams pounced on those weaknesses at the weekend. Celtic, I think the substitutions were meant to try and get Celtic back into the game, but it was Yang and Cal McGregor that were involved in the two final goals for Rangers. Yang, that
I know, I didn't want to hammer the guy too much.
We've talked, we've been on here talking about guys coming onto the pitch and just not putting in the effort. We've seen it with Mikey Johnston in the last game against Rangers, where he's on there as if he's trying not to just to let Tavernier do what he wants. We've seen it with Abada against Hibs, saying it was absolutely criminal what he does, and I genuinely can't remember a good thing Yang done. The one where Ademida cuts inside, he gets the ball, runs away from goal, and then taps it back to somebody, and Rangers take the ball and break on him. Callum McGregor's pass is poor across to him. He's waiting on the ball button, allows somebody to nip in, and then for the final goal.
Hugely inexperienced as a footballer. That's what I got for that. Like, not even as like a Celtic player, just as like, it looks like a guy who can dribble well, has a good touch, but ultimately is not very good at being a footballer in a football match.
At what age do you get experienced at that? Don't let your guy cut inside. That's on his stronger foot.
Primary school stuff. That.
And Pod Matondo done it twice or three times before he ended up scoring the goal.
Yeah, and it's even when you see it, Matondo doesn't even sell him that well. No. He just allows him to breeze past it. I know we always say this word's used too much, but in a game of this magnitude, that is unforgivable because that is the difference between 3 points and a draw in this game. It could be the difference in a league title. You have to be tighter to your man. You cannot show him inside, a guy that's already done that to you. You cannot give him a free shot there. And he done that. He came on, had an absolute disaster. And ultimately, look, it's cost Celtic either. The whole game, Celtic could have done better in different parts. But these fine margins, these moments are what makes these games special. It won't be, Rangers won't be thinking about the poor defending from Yang. They'll be thinking about the Matondo finish. But if Celtic had won that game, Rangers would be looking at the two centre-halves saying, how the two of yous there, and Ademida's got a free shot at goal and it's went under our keeper. So these are the moments that make these games. And to lose it because of something like that, a stray pass and deflection, Cal McGregor trying to get back at for the second goal, as he gets back he slips, which means he then the deflection hits him and goes in. But that last goal was so avoidable from Celtic. Johnson could have done better, but Yang, come on mate.
I was pleased for Ida. I was pleased he got his goal, Stephen. Yeah. He's I think it's fair to say Ida's contribution to this season so far has been good.
It's
been good since he's arrived on loan. But just for you, what's between these teams?
Well, realistically, I can't really disagree with anything Melly said. It's very, very little just now. With fine margins, you could make the case either way because, you know, come next week, Rangers might be top again. But that's kind of the point. We've played out a season for over 30 games now and there's next to nothing between. We're talking about goal difference here and there. Yeah. One's jumping over the other. There's 1 point in it. There's 2 points in it the other way. So just on that alone, that's why we have a league table. That there is very, very little between the two teams. But I'd still make Celtic favourites. As it stands, if I force myself, I basically make Celtic favourites because of that game. Now, I did say yesterday during our live coverage that I've got a nagging feeling now that there's so much focus on this game that one of these teams is going to have a disaster elsewhere. So maybe like lose to Motherwell or something like that out of nowhere. I know Rangers have already done that.
Did you say lose to Dundee? Because they're playing lose them to Dundee.
Hopefully it is that. Hopefully it is
Kelly,
that.
Kelly away, stinking yeah, hearts. So I always like down to Rangers. Don't know why I brought that.
So I've got that funny feeling that it's going to be something else that this, not so much decides it, but really throws a spanner into the wonks. Well, into the wonks.
Into the what?
Into the wonks.
Yes, 1-1, Mel. That's
what I meant. Forward one. Yeah. So throw a spanner into the wonks of the title race. But as it stands just now, there's next to nothing between the two teams. And I know people will get annoyed at me saying that because it's a Celtic podcast, but I'm only going on the bare facts of it. It doesn't really matter what I think is between the two teams. I don't really want to necessarily do that. But none of their players get into our team and all that kind of thing. Looking at the title race as it stands at the league table, there's next to nothing between the two teams. So that's what's going to make it so tight, so interesting in this last half dozen
honestly,
games.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, the last six games, there's definitely twists and turns, for sure. Yeah.
That's what I'm getting at. That's what I've just got this weird feeling about how somebody's going to have a nightmare out there. Hopefully it's not Celtic, but I'm feeling quite positive about it. Having watched the game back, I was quite impressed with what Celtic did. It could have been better. I do have reservations about the overall performance, certainly individual performances. Thought Ida was very positive when he came on. I agree with that. Great goal.
Did you think before the game that Celtic could score three at Ibrox?
No, I certainly wouldn't have thought it'd be three each. If I thought Celtic were going to score three at Ibrox, probably not, because you know I thought it was going to be much tighter than that. Because it's not really been massive scoring games between the two of late. I didn't think that going in, but three each I would never have picked. But Ida, I thought, was very positive. He was another one, though, but what I said about Maida earlier on, I wish he had done better. There was that one where he won the ball out on the left.
Just before the Yang incident. It was him that played him.
You can read Ida's mind. He's got no interest in anything other than shooting. In fairness, nothing has really arrived yet. Mm. So he starts to drift towards the edge of the box. And from that point on, you can see him. He's shooting. And it then it kind of blows away. But I'm not going to criticise him for that. I wish he had done better. I wish he had maybe made a better decision. But I can't criticise him for that because we make such a big deal of these derbies. He'll be reading the headlines in his head, make himself a hero in one of these derbies. Irish guy and all that, right? Probably a Celtic fan, I'd imagine. Hope so, anyway. Get him out. But he's probably backs himself to score from there. However, it was the wrong decision. Then it fell to Yang, and all of a sudden Rangers are away. But that said, it was a really positive contribution from him.
You've got to keep the heel. There's six games left. We are going to be there for every single step of the way. Patreon.com/20minutetims if you want to support us. And once again, thank you to everyone who signed up for the Derby weekend. Obviously.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Another derby coming up, so we'll do some fantastic coverage of that. But we'll see you next week.